One of the best known stories in our society is Charles Dickens's classic, A Christmas Carol. You are likely familiar with the story. I mean, in addition to the novel, there are, by one count, 135 film versions of the story. Even Mickey Mouse and the Muppets have their own version of A Christmas Carol. Of course, we know the character of Ebenezer Scrooge. Dickens describes him this way. He was a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. Hard and sharp as flint, secret and self-contained, and solitary as an oyster. Of course, he's visited by his old partner, Jacob Marley, during the night, and then by three ghosts, three spirits of Christmas past, present, and yet to come. And he sees his life the way it was, and he sees what's happening in the present, and then he sees what will happen. And it's that last vision that impresses him most of all, a vision of a lonely death, of an overgrown grave, of debtors who are celebrating, relieved by his death, of his unpaid servants stealing his possessions to try to compensate themselves for what he never paid them for. And of course, he wakes up a changed man. Well, the text that John just read for us from Ecclesiastes 4 has a meditation that's a little bit like that story of Scrooge. Wrestling with the place of friendship and community, while also thinking about what does it mean to be successful. We have been working throughout this summer our way through this book from the Bible's wisdom literature, through Ecclesiastes, and so we're each week looking at the musings and the meditations of this person that calls himself the teacher. As he talks about his search for meaning in life and all of the various avenues that were open to him to pursue that meaning, everything from work to pleasure to money to the accumulation of knowledge and wisdom, he was pursuing meaning. And so he looks at these pursuits using that phrase, under the sun, with the idea that you know, many of us might seek to pursue meaning in life, and we would do it without any thought of God. And that's life under the sun, according to the teacher. It's life without God. It's pursuing meaning without God's presence or activity in your life. And his conclusion, the teacher's, is that kind of pursuit without God it's hollow. It's meaningless, like a puff of smoke, like a cloud. So, on its surface, we read this book, and it sounds awfully pessimistic. And yet what the teacher is doing is trying to say to us not that everything is pointless, but rather that even ordinary things can have great significance if God is a part of that equation. The identity of the teacher is never revealed throughout the course of the book, but I said to you way back in week one that it's very likely that either the teacher was the Israelite King Solomon, or maybe more likely someone taking on the persona of Solomon and his perspective on the world. And that's significant to recognize the perspective of Solomon in the text, because Solomon was king of Israel during what you might think of as the Golden Age. And Solomon, he would have had the resources to pursue any avenue of meaning in life that he wanted. He was known for having 700 wives and 300 concubines, scads of servants, advisors, counselors, soldiers, ambassadors. At the end of his life, by one measure, his net worth in current day dollars could have been as high as $1.1 trillion. So he could have pursued meaning in any way that he wanted. The interesting thing when you compare him with his father, David, who was also a king of Israel. Maybe the most striking thing is that in David's story, you see mention of David's friends. Now, David had a close friend, Jonathan. And he had other men that surrounded him. And we know their names. They're recorded for us in the scriptures of men that were close to him and would have done anything for him. And when we read the stories of Solomon, for the most part, we're reading a solitary story. I mean, for all of the people that Solomon probably had around him all hours of the day. I mean, he probably never had a day or night by himself. And yet you never get the name of a single friend to this great king. And so you can imagine that even in the midst of all his power and success and money, that he could get to the end of his life and he could look back with regret, recognizing that for all that he had, there was something missing. For all his success, there was a lot in relationships that he missed. So, as we come to Ecclesiastes 4, we have kind of a meditation on success and relationships. And so we see, first of all, when we think about success under the sun, and that's what the teacher gives us in these first number of verses in Ecclesiastes 4, is a picture of success under the sun, success without thought of God and his sense of what is important. And we find that with success under the sun, that it will lead, in many cases, to oppression. Verse 1, I saw the tears of the oppressed, the teacher says as he looked around. And they have no comforter, because power was on the side of the oppressors. You know, it wasn't uncommon for people under the sun, for successful people, to be betraying others, using up other people, trampling other people, leaving others behind, lording it over others on their way to the top. And their success rested so heavily on the backs of others, of those that they abused and mistreated and exploited. This the teacher looked around and saw. With success under the sun, there's often oppression, and it was so bad in verses 2 and 3 that the teacher says, you know, it would be better to die and not have to see all this oppression. Or better yet, it would be better not to even be born and to have to see the oppression of the world. Because success often leads there. Success under the sun also leads, in verse 4, to competition. Verse 4, I saw that all toil and achievement spring from one person's envy of another. In other words, from rivalry, from people pushing and clawing and competing to succeed, to outdo the other, to outwit, to outsell the other. Competition. But, you know, some people, they might compete on their way to the top, and then on their way find, you know, is it really worth all of this? And so in verse 4, he talks about some that might just fold their hands, who get tired of the rat race and they sit back. But they're not just minding their own business. They're actually trying to ride the coattails of other people to success. So for some, success leads to competition. For others, success under the sun might lead to manipulation, where they work the system, where they freeload on the work of others, where they let others pay their way. Of course, the teacher's observation is that people who do this, I mean, they're fools, and they ultimately lead to their own ruin. And ultimately, success under the sun, according to the teacher, leads to isolation. Verse 8, there was a man all alone. He had neither son or brother. There was no end to his toil. In other words, he worked all the time, and he made a whole lot of money doing it. And yet, his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling, he asked, and why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? In other words, what's all this work really getting me? He asks himself. And the teacher's conclusion is, this too is meaningless. In fact, it's a miserable business. People can pour themselves into achieving success. But if that's their main goal, chances are good that when they achieve those goals, when they get where they're going, they'll find that they've left everyone else behind. And they're there all by themselves. Now, aren't you glad that the teacher lived thousands of years ago, and so, I mean, none of this is relevant today. I mean, success looks nothing like this today. And, you know, your smiles tell me that you get my sarcasm. Could have been written today, couldn't it? I mean, people still value success. And sometimes they value success at all costs. And so if you have to oppress someone else, if you have to take them down, if you have to manipulate others, so be it. And you know, in American culture, where we so value independence, I mean, if you can be successful all on your own, all the better. I mean, we celebrate the self-made man or self-made woman who overcomes obstacles to single-handedly, you know, emerge from rags to riches. We hold up that value. You know, a bunch of years ago now, there was a song that was popular by the group Destiny's Child. Beyonce was the lead singer. Independent Women, it was called. I'm not going to sing it for you, in case you were wondering. But the lyrics go something like this. The shoes on my feet, I bought them. The clothes I'm wearing, I bought them. The rock I'm rocking, I bought it. The watch I'm wearing, the house I live in, the car I'm driving, I bought it because I depend on me. That's us. That's the air we breathe and the water we drink. I depend on me. And yet, intrinsically we know that depending on me isn't enough. Don't we know that? A former U.S. Surgeon General observed that loneliness and weak social connections actually decrease a person's lifespan by the same amount that smoking 15 cigarettes a day would do. A palliative care worker wrote a book called The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. It'd be interesting to do Family Feud here and try to guess the five. We won't do that now, but two of the five. Number four, regret of the dying, was I wish I stayed in touch with my friends. Number two was I wish I hadn't worked so much, and you might see a connection between those two. We know this. And so the next observation that I want to offer you is not a profound one, really. It's just that when we turn the page and talk not about success under the sun with no thought of God, but when we talk about God's view of what is a successful life, then we will certainly recognize that success with God spotlights relationships. We can go all the way back to the creation story. And in a very poetic way, the writer of Genesis tells us that God created the heavens and the earth. Day by day, he created things. And every day, at the end, as he's created, he says, it was good. And then we come to Genesis chapter 2, and God sees something that wasn't good. Amidst all the goodness, there was something that wasn't good, and that goodness was that the man was alone. And so he created woman. Because people, then and now, are made for relationships. We are made for community. We're made for connection. You know, the buddy system is not just for school field trips. We're made to be in relationships. Success, from God's perspective, must include relationships. Now, the teacher recognized that, because after his meditation on success, under the sun. He comes to in verse 9 to that beautiful poetic picture of friendship. In verse 9, he says, two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labor. So if success from God's perspective involves relationships, then in this beautiful passage in Ecclesiastes 4, then we get a picture of what those relationships look like. And so success with God will spotlight relationships of mutual achievement. Together, two can accomplish a whole lot more than one can individually. You've maybe heard that proverb somewhere along the line. Sounds like it could be in the Bible, but it's not. It might be an African proverb. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I wonder if you've heard the name Adam Morrison. He is one of a long line of winners by association. Adam Morrison was a basketball star in college who made his way into the NBA. You don't know him likely because of his smashingly successful career in the NBA, because he didn't have much of one. Recruited by the Charlotte Bobcats, eventually ended up for 2 years with the Los Angeles Lakers. In the 2 years that he was with them, his average playing time was less than 7 minutes a game. And his score, he averaged 2 points per game. But Adam Morrison is an NBA champion, because the 2 years that he played with the LA Lakers happened to be 2 years where they were NBA champions. And so for as small as his contribution might have been, Adam Morrison is a two-time NBA champion. And we could say, well, that's not really fair. Or we could recognize that there's really something beautiful about the idea of success being something that we accomplish together. It's not about a single person's achievement, but it's about what we can do together, and together we can do more than each one of us could individually. That's success. It's relationships of mutual achievement. And success is also relationships of mutual help in our failures. Two are better than one because, verse 10, if either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. Falling is a part of life, isn't it? I mean, it's for toddlers, a literal part of life. And maybe for seniors later on, it's a literal part of life. And for some of us in between, it can be part of life, but not just literal. Falling is a part of life. You take a risk, and it doesn't work out. You make a bad decision. You don't get the grade that you need to get into the program. A marriage fails. A relationship fractures. Integrity is breached. We fall into sin. There are lots of ways to fall. And we all do. But success from God's perspective is that when we do, we are not left to pick up the pieces or to pick up ourselves on our own. I attended a number of years ago a presentation by a speaker from Water Street Rescue Mission. And he was talking about poverty in our society. And one of the interesting things that he said that has stuck with me years later is that for many people in poverty, what they most struggle with is a poverty of relationship. You know, we think poverty, when we think poverty, we think, well, someone doesn't have enough money. They don't have enough resources. But you know, if I was overwhelmed by a situation, a tragedy, I mean, a huge financial expense, if I was overwhelmed by those things, I would have family that I could call. I would have friends that I could call for help. I would have church family that I could look to for support and help. If I was overwhelmed, some people in poverty, many people in poverty, yes, they don't have a lot of resources, but they also don't necessarily have those relationships of support where they could call on someone else for help when they do struggle with a failure. Success from God's perspective involves that mutual help, and it also involves mutual encouragement amidst our circumstances. Verse 11, if two lie down together, they will keep warm, but how can one keep warm alone? Now, we hear that verse and our minds naturally think marriage. But you know, we probably, our first thought, if we're reading it in context, should not be a happy couple spooning to keep warm at night. Rather, we should be thinking of people traveling in the wilderness. When I was in Israel while I was in college, our group spent a couple days traveling through the Negev desert in the southern part of Israel. So we spent the night in the desert. So during the day, you know, it was fairly warm for the, this was in January, and yet it was still fairly warm in the desert during the day. And then at night, we slept in sleeping bags under the stars in the desert, which does not sound really cool. And it was. And I was also freezing in the desert during the night. You know, even with all of my layers on in my sleeping bag, because it gets cold, even in the desert at night. The teacher says if two are together, even in freezing temperatures, they can help to keep each other warm when they're traveling. You know, that last point that I talked about, mutual help in our failures, was about what we do. This one is about things that happen beyond our control. You know, circumstances beyond our control. We can't control the weather in the desert. And there are a whole lot of other things that we can't control, times and situations where we are vulnerable, waiting in the hospital, waiting for test results, waiting for that employer to call back, waiting for the judge's ruling. We're vulnerable. First day on a new job. First day in a new school. Moving to a new community. We're vulnerable. And those are times when the warmth of an encouraging friend can make such a difference. This is success in our relationships. And lastly, success in relationships is support in our conflicts. Verse 12, though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. Now that sounds like kind of a violent encounter feel to it. Unlikely for most of us to be in a situation where we deal with that, but we all deal with conflict. You know, misunderstandings, miscommunications, missed cues and expectations and opportunities all contribute together in some relationships to make a person feel like an enemy. And we can get to the place where every interaction with that person feels stressful or even overwhelming. In the 2005 movie Batman Begins, a Gotham police commissioner, Gordon, at one point in the movie is feeling overwhelmed by the conflict, by the corruption, by the evil in the city that he is called to address. And feels like, well, you know, what can he do as one man? And then Batman steps forward and says, now we are two. So helpful sometimes. In the midst of conflict to have another person. And not another person to help us gang up on the bad guy, but another person to help us have some outside perspective, to listen, to give us counsel. That kind of mutual support in conflict can make such a difference. When the teacher saw all of the ways that our pursuit of success can affect relationships, his conclusion was, it's a miserable business under the sun. People oppressing and manipulating each other, cutthroat competition, cutting ourselves off from others, ending up at the top of the ladder alone. But the teacher also saw that it didn't have to be that way. That we have a relational God at the helm of the universe, calling us into relationship with him and with each other. Today, we have an even fuller picture of that God. And we can see that all the gifts of friendship are ours in Jesus. Jesus makes help when we fall, encouragement in the hard times, support in conflict available to all of his disciples. He invites us into friendship. To his first century disciples, Jesus said this, "You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. For everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you." Chose us to be friends. Chose us for all of the gifts of friendship that he wants to make available to us. And not only is friendship available to us in Jesus, it's also available in the church. Followers of Jesus can offer each other the same gifts. In fact, we're called to love like this. An interesting mathematical twist in Ecclesiastes 4, verse 12. The writer goes from talking about the power of two to saying a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. Now, probably what the author means there is just that there's power in numbers. But, you know, of course, we can come up with other applications. You know, some have said three cords, faith, hope, and love. Or, you know, three cords, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. This passage has become popular for weddings, where some couples like to take, three strands, three cords, and braid them together, the unity knot, as part of the ceremony. And one of the strands is the bride, and one is the groom, and one represents God. And I'd like to broaden that just to say, anytime you have two followers of Jesus committed to each other, in relationship with each other, when those two are knit together by the presence and the power of Jesus, there's incredible opportunity for that friendship to be even more binding and powerful. It's a hopeful thing when we realize that the Scrooge version of success is ultimately hollow. When we experience the mutual achievement and help, the mutual support and encouragement of friendship gluing us together. When we're followers of Jesus, Jesus is there among us. It becomes visible to the world through us together. I don't know where this sermon finds you. Maybe recognizing that your success goals could include a little more thought of relationship. Maybe being reminded that I depend on me is not really ultimately a way to live. Maybe wanting to invest more deeply in some relationships in your life, or asking God to help you find or to be a better friend. When we look beyond the sun, we realize that we are not made to be alone. The two are better than one. And thank God for the gift that He's given us in each other. Would you pray with me? Lord, we all realize in this world in which we live that we can be driven to success in all kinds of places. And so I pray this morning that you would help us to redefine success. And so much of what I've said this morning, Lord, I feel is so just something that we can easily understand. We know that we're wired for relationship, and yet we're still driven to success, sometimes with little thought of the impact that that drive has on relationship. So open our eyes in fresh ways to the kind of success that you call us to in partnership with you, in relationship with one another. May we experience the mutual beauty of needing one another and of finding all that we need in you. Thank you for the friendship of Jesus, offering to us every gift that we need. It's in His name we pray. Amen.